Wyatt Earp is infamous as an Old West lawman who fought at the Old K Corral. But history seems to have forgotten that later in life he lived in Hollywood, worked as a bounty hunter in private eye, and hobnobbed with old Hollywood royalty. Which makes Scott Bunn wonder,
why is this not a movie?
Hello and welcome to Why Is This Not a Movie, the podcast where we look at a moment in history or a book or a story we can rip from the headlines and ask Hollywood why no one's ever put it onto the big screen. I'm Mike Vago, and joining me this week is Scott Bunn, old friend of the show, host of Run That Back, the non-shouting sports show you can hear as a podcast or on Asheville FM. He also writes the popular Bob Dylan blog, reclinernotes.com, where he goes song by song through Dylan's sprawling discography. Scott, thanks for coming back to the show. Tell us about Wyatt Earp, Private Eye.
Well, first, I love that you use the word sprawling. I love to be on your sprawling number of episodes of this podcast. Yeah, thanks for having me back here. As I said before, Mike, I can't wait to pitch you this movie and to talk about this movie. Okay, so you gave a little bit of a teaser for it there at the top, but I first heard about this idea when I was reading a book called Desert Oracle by Ken Lane. And first of all, I just need to recommend Desert Oracle and Ken Lane to everybody. Ken does a podcast of that name and a print publication. I first picked up the little print pamphlet kind of thing called Desert Oracle at the 29 Palms Inn in 29 Palms, California. And it's basically tales of the Mojave, but also of the Southwest. There's a lot of deep history in there, but could be contemporary stories, deals with, you know, natural landscape, like the flora and fauna of the region, like Joshua trees and coyotes, but also about the supernatural, you know, ghost stories and UFO stories, conspiracy stories. So he's just a wealthy prospector who has just been mining these stories over the years in the desert.
I love that in an era when like nationwide media outlets are failing and there's this, you know, this whole turnover as the media kind of goes from print to digital, there are still these like weird, very local publications. Cause we have a magazine in New Jersey called Weird New Jersey or Weird NJ that has become a website, and he does a bit on WFMU. And but it just started out as a zine, and it's the same kind of thing. This guy just collects all these weird stories about like haunted spaces in New Jersey.
Yeah, and really, we should have Ken Lane on Why Is This Not a Movie, because he's just filled with stories and ideas that should be movies. So yeah, want to give full credit to him, Ken Lane and Desert Oracle. Yeah, and so I was reading his book. So he put out an actual book, a collection of a lot of these stories. I was reading it earlier this year, and I was reading along, and there's a story about Wyatt Earp, and there was just a mention that he was a deputy sheriff of San Bernardino County in California, entered honorary deputy at least, and in the 1910s, he did a lot of freelance work for the Los Angeles police as a bounty hunter. And I was like, what? Wyatt Earp was a bounty hunter in the early 20th century in Los Angeles. And that's when I started buzzing I started getting really excited. So maybe we should talk a little bit about why Wyatt Earp is a known entity. I mean, most people know about him, about the shootout at the OK Corral. Happened in 1881, where he and his brother and Doc Holliday killed three cowboys. But then over the next few months, he and his brothers and the rest of his gang were sort of gunned down by these folks. But, you know, Wyatt Earp lived on. And that idea, that historical action at the OK Corral is a true story, even though it feels like myth. And it's been the basis of any number of, you know, pulp westerns and then early film and then later film. So then this gets into my idea, and it can go from here, is that this idea of Wyatt Earp in his last years in Los Angeles is an unofficial sequel of Tombstone. And we get Kurt Russell to play Wyatt Earp as a private eye bounty hunter in Los Angeles. It all lines up. It should happen right now. Have to do the rest of the episode. Why is this not a movie?
Oh my God, that's great. We usually do cast at the end, but I'm going to jump into mine because I had thought Thomas Hayden Church, who was also in Tombstone, because I was looking for actors in the early 60s who could kind of play the heavy, but also be kind of interesting characters.
Right.
And he, that was his first movie.
Yes.
Was Tombstone, but you don't see no Kurt Russell. That's perfect.
Yeah. And it's just, I mean, he's the right age because Wyatt Earp was going to be so, you know, was be late in his life at this point. You know, Kurt Russell's a fit guy, still married to Goldie Hawn. He looks great, but you know, he's getting up there in years. So anyway, so that's the idea. So want to build it out of that, but I think it's kind of Kurt Russell's movie because we kind of need to see elder Kurt Russell playing an aging bounty hunter, a private investigator in early 1900s Los Angeles. And so there are a couple of cool things about this that, you know, first of all, I'm like a sucker for Los Angeles noir. I've lived in LA, but I love the movie Chinatown. It's like one of my favorite movies, if not my favorite. I love James Ellroy's LA Quartet movies. But the whole idea is what's really cool about the end of Tombstone is that he rides off into the sunset, right? Like that's the cliche for all Westerns. So this is Wyatt Earp's sunset is a noir where noir is after sunset. And so the tone of it needs to be different. So, but it is still kind of a Western because it's still early Los Angeles, but it still has that feel of a noir. So you get this sort of combination of noir Western in the same thing.
Well, the Westerns, you know, the sort of traditional Westerns always end with somebody cleaning up the town.
Right.
Because it's this transition from the Wild West to the civilized West. And early 20th century LA is kind of the beginnings of that civilized, you know, California, where the movie, you know, it was this kind of weird frontier town that was really built by the movie industry coming in.
Right.
And so he's there at the very beginning of it. And so he's at the end of the West and then the beginning of what comes after.
Yeah. And first, you mentioned Thomas Hayden Church. I was just going through the research. I just wanted to say this out loud, that like the original Tombstone, that cast was insane. It was filled with people. So Kurt Russell, Val Kilmer as Doc Holliday, Sam Elliott, Bill Paxton, Powers Booth, Michael Biehn, Charlton Heston, Jason Priestley, Thomas Hayden Church, Dana Delaney, Dana Wheeler Nicholson, we know her from Fletch, Michael Rooker from The Walking Dead, Billy Bob was in that, Billy Zane of Titanic fame, John Corbett from Sex and the City and My Big Fat Greek Wedding, and Terry O'Quinn from Lost, and then Robert Mitchum was the narrator. I mean, that's one of the great collections of talent in one movie.
Yeah, that really is amazing.
Yeah.
And looking at the cast list here, Wyatt Earp III.
Yes.
Played somebody named Billy Claiborne.
I know.
And one of your old favorites, Colonel Bruce Hampton, had a cameo.
What? Colonel Bruce Hampton was in that too?
Yeah, he's listed as bar patron.
Oh my gosh. I have to admit that when I first saw Tombstone, I was like, okay, this is fine. I didn't really get it. As I've seen it since that first time, it's really grown on me over the years. So yeah, the original Tombstone, Kurt Russell essentially directed the movie and wrote it as well, all but in name. I guess they hired a first-time director and he couldn't handle it. And Kurt Russell was like, yeah, kid, I got this. So he kind of did that. So I think like really this pitch needs to go to him. And when I told this idea to my wife, Jenny, she was like, let's get him on the phone now. It's a terrific idea. So is it okay? Could we move into sort of the story of him as a bounty hunter?
Of course. Before you do, I just want to know, I pulled up the director, George Cosmatos. He wasn't a first-time director. He had directed Rambo First Blood Part 2, Cobra, a couple other movies I don't know.
He was the second director who came in.
Oh, I see. Okay.
There was an original person and he was in over his head. So Kurt Russell's like, I worked with this guy on Cobra, but it was basically became his project.
Oh, the screenwriter Kevin Jarre was the original director. Yes. And was pushed out. Okay.
So this is a little bit of background. After the shootout at the OK Corral, Wyatt Earp basically goes from boomtown to boomtown. He went up to Alaska, and he became friends with the novelist Jack London up there. And then eventually in his old age, he was 62. In 1910, he moved to Los Angeles. And so this all comes from Wikipedia now. So I'm just quoting directly from this. So in 1910, he was 62. The Los Angeles Police Department hired Wyatt at $10 per day to carry out various tasks, quote, outside the law, such as retrieving criminals from Mexico, which he did very capably. This led to Wyatt's final armed confrontation. In October 1910, he was asked by former Los Angeles Police Commissioner to head up a posse to protect surveyors of the American Trona Company, who were attempting to wrest control of mining claims for vast deposits of potash. So Wyatt and the group he guarded were regarded as claim jumpers and were confronted by armed representatives. With guns pulled, Wyatt came out of his tent with a Winchester rifle, firing a round at the feet of federal receivers. "Back off or I'll blow you apart, or my name ain't Wyatt Earp." The owner summoned the U.S. Marshal, who arrested Earp and 27 others, served them with a summons for contempt of court, and sent them home. Earp's actions did not resolve the dispute, which eventually escalated into the potash wars of the Mojave Desert.
Wow. And also, Kurt Russell, you know, the cowboy, yes, shot going up, panning up to his hat saying, "Back off or I'll blow you to pieces," or "my name, I wide up." Like, there's your trailer.
I know, exactly. So I
this
think
thing just sells itself.
So I know that you, it's always a question of like, is this a movie? Is this a TV series? I mean, I would watch a TV series of like A Case of the Week with Kurt Russell as this private eye, you know, like, okay, you gotta kind of like the first season of Justified kind of thing.
Oh,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Like bring in, like you have to bring in this this guy who's wanted south of the border. And so, yeah, you get that kind of Western slash noir feel, kind of like Breaking Bad too. Breaking Bad always kind of had that feel. Also, I don't know if you saw, there was a reboot of Perry Mason that HBO did. Yeah, with what's his name from The Americans as Matthew the lead. Reese. Yeah, and it was, like, the first half of the series was a lot better than the second half. Like, as soon as it became a courtroom drama where he was, like, Perry Mason, I lost interest. But the first half, he was, like, a down-and-out private detective. And I'm like, that's the show! And so that's basically
Even
what
though I was
want.
Like, what does this have to do with Perry Mason? But it was a good show on its own. I just sort of thought, like, just call something else and make something new for a change.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so like the look and feel of that Perry Mason was really great, like sort of dried out LA in a drought, but it was really golden and yellow. So you had that mix of noir and the West as well.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, everything these days could be a movie or a TV show.
Right.
I feel like if you're doing this as a spiritual sequel to Tombstone,
yeah,
I kind of think it has to be a big, you know, epic movie.
Yeah.
But I also feel like it could work. And maybe, you know, these days you can do both.
Yeah, and I thought, I had this idea too, kind of like what this thing is it's kind of like The Color of Money, which is like a sequel to The Hustler and has the same main character, Paul Newman, playing it in both things. But it's kind of like a more of like a spiritual sequel. It's a lot different from The Hustler.
It's a very different story that happens to have the same character in it.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I kind of feel like this is a similar thing, even though that's still like these guys playing pool. This is still like Wyatt Earp still knows how to use a gun.
Yeah, exactly. And frankly, I feel like we need more sequels like that.
Yeah.
That take the characters of the setting, but then tell a different kind of story, because like someone once wrote, there are two kinds of sequels. There's Airplane 2, all the jokes you remember from Airplane 1.
Right.
And then there's also The Godfather 2 or Empire Strikes Back, where you expand the world that you got to see in the first movie. And you build on the story, and you say, this is what happens next to these people. This is the logical following, rather than like, you know, Jaws 2. What if there was a different shark that also went to Amity and also Sheriff Brody had to kill? And like, but we couldn't
afford to drive this.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
yeah,
it's just hitting all the same beats. Or like Rocky 2 is a remake of Rocky, except he wins in the end.
Right. Exactly. There is also, did you ever hear of that show Warrior, which was on Cinemax and now is on HBO Max?
I don't think no.
This was a cool show, kind of like a martial arts show. It's set in San Francisco in 1870, and it's actually based on Bruce Lee's original concept for a TV show that became Kung Fu that basically they stole, the studio stole from Bruce Lee. So now, like, these folks are like, hey, let's dig up Bruce Lee's original pitch for the show. And they did it. So it's like, it's this half Japanese man who comes to San Francisco looking for a sibling in Kung Fu. It was his brother. In Warrior, it's his sister. And he gets caught up in the Tong Wars in San Francisco. But there are also like trips out of the city where it becomes a Western, which Kung Fu kind of was as well. And so I like the Warrior is just really an excuse for like cool Kung Fu set pieces. So fighting sequences. So that's what Warrior is. And I don't think this movie that I have envisioned is so much like a Kung Fu action thing, but I like the blending of Western noir in both like city and country. But yeah, if you haven't seen Warrior and you like cool fights, it's a fun show.
Oh yeah. But I don't think this Wyatt Earp movie is necessarily a shoot 'em up.
Yeah.
Even though there's some of that. It's more about like the changing times and this guy we associate with, you know, 1870s Old West in 1910s Hollywood and kind of a very different world than we picture Wyatt Earp existing in.
And that's the other thing. You hinted at this early on, but right, Los Angeles was, you know, really a nothing town before the movie studios. It was warmer than New York City, so they could shoot a lot more year-round in Los Angeles. And the light is great in Los Angeles. And so Wyatt Earp was also there at the beginning of cowboy movies and of movies. So he served as an unpaid film consultant for several silent cowboy movies, and he became friends with a lot of the big silent cowboy stars of the era, William S. Hart and Tom Mix, and then he became friendly with the movie director John Ford. So again, if it's more of like a series, like you could definitely see a whole season where he's working on a film, but also sort of caught up in like doing bounty hunter work around that as well. I just love the idea that, like, you know, here's this like legend from the West, you know, which hadn't happened all that long before, 30 years before, but it's already legend. And you know, they're trying to turn it into movies, and he's like, let me show you how we did it, you know.
That's the crazy thing. Yeah. You don't think about how close in proximity the silent film era was to the Old West. And so if you wanted to know how to make a Western, you asked the freaking Wyatt Earp, like the guy who was there. Like I wrote a piece for AV Club and I was doing Wiki Wormhole about this woman who, an actress who was on the Titanic, survived. And then made the first movie about the Titanic, like a month after surviving the Titanic.
That's so crazy. Well, I mean, it is, we've talked about this off mic before, but just the collapsed time between like, this happened, you know, the shootout at the OK Corral happened in 1878, and this is happening in 1910. I can't do the math, but like, that's not that long ago, but just like the great line from Mad Men about the character, the secretary character who passes away. And they were like, she was raised in a one room cabin and she worked on a,
you know, she died on the 37th floor of a skyscraper. She was an astronaut.
She was an astronaut. Like this is another one of these Wyatt Earp was like spanning a couple of different decades and sort of sensibilities in terms of, you know, what we now think of as just like the past. But yeah, it wasn't too far away.
Well, that's the thing I keep coming back to, that things we kind of lump together as the past, you know, encompass all these different eras, and like people who we think of as being in ancient history, they had their own ancient history.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? But at the same time, you know, the 1870s, 1880s, the post-Civil War era to the 1910s, that just feels like a much bigger shift than like you and I were around in the 90s and now we're still going to the 2020s. Like, yeah, you know, I mean, but at the same time, to somebody looking back 100 years from now,
yeah,
like we were in the pre-internet era.
Yeah,
like that's a huge cultural shift.
Totally. Yeah. That's the divide that we were able to bridge. Not carrying a phone around in our hip pocket that has access to all the information in the world.
Yeah, exactly. And we have better phones than Mr. Spock did when we were kids.
Yes.
And we're doing a Zoom call from halfway across the country
exactly.
to talk about movies for an audience of people, you know, in theory, all over the world.
Well, and I mentioned John Ford. You know, later he would go on to direct one of my favorite movies, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. And that's all about, you know, legends of the West. You know, the famous line coming out of that movie is, you know, print the legend. So with this, like Wyatt Earp was already a legend in, you know, 19-teens Los Angeles for something that just happened 30 years before. That's like us talking about something that happened in the 80s, you know, it just feels really weird to think about, but it's true. He was a legend at that time because of, yeah, those pulp Westerns and all of that.
Yeah. It's also funny how much Wyatt Earp like owes his reputation to media because
yeah,
those pulp, but there was a like biography of him that came out shortly after he died. That was really what turned him into a folk hero. And that came out in the 30s.
Yeah. So that's basically it. It's not like I have a plot laid out. I kind of feel like, you know, like, yeah, we got enough here. You know, there's enough to go on.
Well, it's also kind of, you know, Kurt Russell, Wyatt Earp, Hollywood, what do you need, a roadmap?
Yeah, exactly. Potash Force. Yeah, let's do it. Yeah. I mean, if you wanted to call it Potash Force, I'm in. So I did some thinking about directors, and my list is pretty long. Can I run these past you?
Yeah.
So my ideal director is probably too old, but is the director Walter Hill. And he's a famed writer and director. He directed The Warriors. He directed 48 Hours. He directed a ton of Westerns, including Wild Bill and several episodes of Deadwood, episodes of, I think, Breaking Bad, too. There's another one that I can't think of off the top of my head. He's probably too old, but I love Walter Hill. There's also like the easy answers. Like I think Michael Mann could do a great version of this movie. You know, Steven Soderbergh, even Quentin Tarantino. We know he loves Kurt Russell.
And
Los Angeles. I think those are the kind of easy ones. So here are a couple that are maybe like not quite as like easy, but Cary Fukunaga, directed all of the episodes of the first season of True Detective, and he just did the new Bond movie. I was a really big fan of first season of True Detective. He really got the sort of place feel of Louisiana in that. I think he would do great with this.
Yeah. And that's kind of a noir ish story without being a traditional noir. Like I was going to say,
exactly
when you're mentioning Breaking Bad as a sort of noir in the West, mm-hmm. it kind of replaces the darkness and gloominess for this like oppressive sunshine.
Exactly. Yeah. That burned out gold yellow. That's what I want. Like Perry Mason did that really well too, especially in the pilot. The other one kind of like noir adjacent, Jane Campion's Top of the Lake. I think you enjoyed that series as well. The first season, I started the second season and just couldn't get into it. But
yeah, we talked about that in a previous episode. The second season was rough going.
Yeah.
It was just too, like, every character was unlikable. It was a little hard to watch. But the first one was brilliant.
Yeah. And she has a new movie coming out that everybody's kind of like drooling over. I think it's called Power of the Dog. It's a Western starring Benedict Cumberbatch. Wow. So that should be pretty cool. She's on my list for this project. James Mangold, too. He's a great director, has no specific style, but operates in lots of different styles and genres. He did Logan.
He did 3:10 to Yuma, didn't he?
Yep. Yeah. So I think he would do really well. So this is a kind of young and up and coming guy. There's a guy named David Robert Mitchell, and he did this movie called Under the Silver Lake that I love. And I urge people to watch it, though I know that people might hate it and might be like, Scott Bunn, I'm never going to follow one of your recommendations again. But it's set in contemporary Los Angeles, starring Andrew Garfield. And it's kind of like a contemporary noir. It kind of has some magical realism too, but it's like, it kind of pairs well with Robert Altman's The Long Goodbye. It's a very millennial feel of what it feels like to live in Los Angeles. But the movie has a very specific look and feel. And I think this guy's really talented. I love this movie. I've watched it a number of times. So I think he's talented to sort of pull it off. Though this is far from being a millennial. I just think he's a talented guy. And then like Kelly Reichardt, who did Meek's Cut Off and First Cow. Carl Franklin, who did Devil in a Blue Dress, which is a Walter Mosley adaptation.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And One False Move is another noir. Shane Black, who did Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, and of course all the Marvel movies, but I love Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. And then Curtis Hanson, who did LA Confidential, and then Wonder Boys, and then dropped off the map. I don't know what happened to Curtis Hanson.
Yeah, and I love those two movies, and I'd love to see him do something else on that scale.
Exactly. So those are kind of the long list of directors. Did you have any?
I just have one, and I think in every previous episode, you've had some terrific left field idea that surprised me in a great way. And so this is one that I think will surprise you just because this is somebody I hate, which is Paul Thomas Anderson.
Oh, yeah.
And I know you love him.
But, I do.
And I loved Boogie Nights, and I hated Magnolia. And so to the point where I was never able to get back into his other stuff, even though everybody swears up and down on There Will Be Blood and Inherit Vice. And he's done all these very acclaimed movies. And I hated Magnolia so much that I just never watched any of the rest of his stuff. And just not so much a vendetta. It was just like, if I could watch this thing by this guy who made this thing I don't like, or I could watch something else that I might like more, he just never won out. But
yeah, I kind of would have lumped him in with the easy answers, but for you to say PTA, that is a left field choice. Yeah. But There Will Be Blood is a masterpiece. Mike, I urge you to watch There Will Be Blood in the very least.
No, I think you were urging me in the last episode because you were talking about
Daniel Day-Lewis doing John Huston.
Exactly, yeah.
Yes.
but the thing is, like, so many of PTA's films, Boogie Nights, Magnolia, Inherent Vice, the new one, Licorice Pizza, they're all about these odd assortments of characters in L.A., and they're more about the setting and the culture and kind of the clutter than the actual straightforward plot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the feel I think you want for this. You don't just want, like, Wyatt Earp's got to go get his man as a bounty hunter.
Right.
Like, that's interesting, but Wyatt Earp is in L.A. in the silent film era. Like, that's the interesting thing. The setting is really what's the killer hook here. And, you know, he usually works in L.A. in the 1970s, but, you know, There Will Be Blood, he can operate in the 1910s. He can do that period convincingly and well and make it compelling. And sort of combining all that and doing kind of a weird hangout movie full of colorful characters, one of whom is freaking Wyatt Earp.
Yes.
you know, but you're also, he's rubbing elbows with all these people because, A, he's a bounty hunter. He's chasing after criminals. He's going over the Mexican border. And then he's having drinks with John Ford.
Yeah.
And pounding with Jack London.
Exactly. And I don't even know if Jack London is alive at this point, but let's bring him in the movie, you know, like, let's do that. Also, like, John Ford famously had an eye patch, and I've never known, you know, how he lost his eye. Let's make sure that Wyatt Earp is somehow involved with that. Like,
oh, of course.
there's an episode. Like, again, what do you need, a roadmap? Like, let's just do this, you know? Like,
well, so I don't know if you had more casting, and I only had a few people, and it's all kind of stunt casting because this is the famous people he rubs elbows with.
Yeah.
But for Jack Lennon, and again, this is an easy answer, it's two on the nose, but it's also great, which is Nick Offerman.
Oh yeah, I like it.
And for John Ford, this is a little less obvious, but and this isn't even an actor, but Joel Cohen.
Oh,
because apart from the hair, there's kind of a weird resemblance. Mm-hmm. They have the same small glasses, and also the preeminent director of his generation who can do anything well, like that's just kind of a fit. And you know, Joel Cohen like loves old Hollywood, and
yeah,
and his brother's on my shit list for retiring, so forget about him. It's all Joel from now on.
Yeah, exactly.
And then for Tom Mix, I just had John Hamm because you just want somebody who's the square jawed movie star. And
John Hamm is terrific in everything. Yeah, whether it's a comedy or kind of straight action, he can do it. Though I think he always plays, now he only plays like FBI agents, just like, what's his name from Justified?
Ron Goggins? Oh, Timothy Oliphant.
Yeah. So yeah, Timothy Oliphant only plays marshals now. He played it in Justified. He played it in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and in The Mandalorian. He basically played a marshal in that. So now he's just getting typecast as a marshal. So I like that. I would also, Tim Oliphant would be, he's great in everything. Walton Goggins, who you mentioned, those guys are great in everything. Yeah, Justified is a nice kind of playbook for this project as well. So I would be good with that. Yeah, if we could go back in time, Elmore Leonard could write the hell out of this script. I did say one of the easy answers would be Steven Soderbergh, but to my knowledge, Soderbergh has never done a Western. He's definitely done noir. He just did this great noir called No Sudden Move that was on HBO Max that I just loved. And he's played with noir and sort of noir adjacent in a lot of projects, but he's never really done a Western. So that'd be kind of cool. Just when I was thinking about easy answers, I'm like, he's not that easy now that I think about it.
And as a director, he's somebody who's always trying to do something different.
Right.
And he hasn't done a lot of period stuff.
Yeah.
You know, other than the Che Guevara movie. You know, I feel like, this sort of has enough to interest. It's dumb to think like, ooh, can we get Steven Soderbergh for our made up pretend movie? But but it seems like you could make a good case if you make that phone call.
If we get Kurt Russell attached, then, you know, it opens a lot of doors for us.
That's true. I think if we get Kurt Russell attached, we'll have to fight off Quentin Tarantino to make this.
I mean, it does just like kind of write itself. Like I said, like once like picturing Kurt Russell as an aging bounty hunter. Yeah. It just is like, I want to watch that movie.
Oh, absolutely. It's one of those things that like, that works on every level. Kurt Russell reprising Wyatt Earp from Tombstone, Wyatt Earp being a bounty hunter.
Yes.
Is appealing. And then Wyatt Earp goes to Hollywood. Is such an offbeat idea. Like that's appealing. Like there are just layers and layers and layers that are all delicious layers.
It's all there. One last sort of production note. If we get Kurt Russell attached, I'd love to have the band Calexico do the music. I love Calexico as a band. An acquaintance of mine, music writer who was close to that band, dubbed them Desert Noir. And so it feels perfect for what we're talking about with, they're comfortable with both that sort of Morricone sound, but also kind of noir-y jazz stuff. So I think Calexico is our first call for doing the music.
Oh yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always a good episode when we get into the soundtrack. That's like the cherry, that's a cherry on top.
Well, that's my pitch, Mike.
All right, well, that's our movie. If you have any thoughts on cowboy bounty hunters in old Hollywood or ideas for other movies that need to get made, hit us up on Twitter at @whymovie. Thanks again to Scott Bunn. Always a joy to have you on the show. And don't forget to check out reclinernotes.com if you're a Dylan fan. Run that back if you're a sports fan. And both if you're simply a fan of good writing and good conversation. And you can read student journalism, hear college radio, and listen to other lesser podcasts on our parent website, subjectmedia.org. Keep yourself sane, shun the unvaccinated. We'll be back next time on
Why is this not a movie?